United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may I ask the board secretary to please call the roll to board of directors and to give the information on those wishing to participate in the meeting virtually.
Sure. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Legal counsel, are you on the line?
Yes, I
Thank you. And President Pauly is here.
And for the record, Director Record is absent from the meeting this
morning.
That
is correct.
You'd go ahead and read the how to participate virtually.
To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Thank you.
Very good. At this time, we are going to do public comment. These are comments of items that are not on the agenda this morning. I understand we have a few folks wishing to do public comment. If you could come up to the microphone here, and we allow people 3 minutes to give public comment. Our first person will be Jason Freund, I believe, this morning. Sir, thank you. Welcome for coming today.
My name is Jason Friend. I've been living in the EMWD for about 12 years. And recently I tried to start a laundromat business. And so it's been a long process to get to there, saving the money to be able to afford something like that. Researching spaces, and this is just newfound territory for me. Well, I finally got to that impasse where it's, you know, I found the space. I got found a business owner that's willing to let me put one in their shopping center. And then going through the legal process, I found out that the EMWD wants to charge me $138,000 up front to start it in anticipation of the growth load I'd put onto the sewage system based off of EDUs. And, I mean, you can see the sticker shock that I probably had in that moment because that's, you know, more than I can afford for a small business. So through that process, I started to do some research, and there are, I put these binders together for you, but I'll try to keep it really quick. Tab one is a national study done, a pretty extensive one, relevant to how laundry facilities, common area ones, actually reduce water usage by people that do laundry as opposed to in-house units. And it's a pretty in-depth study, but the numbers on average are 3.3 times less water load on a system as opposed to people doing laundry in their house. Now, Murrieta and surrounding area, they really don't have any laundromats to begin with, so there's not much of an opportunity for people to change their laundry habits. The study even includes surveys and a lot of people, like in apartment complexes, people that don't have laundry facilities inside their house, they're a quarter of them go and do laundry at someone else's house. And then on tab two, you have, this is the company, it's LaundryWise, but also known as the Multi-Housing Laundry Association. They did a white paper together for situations like this, briefly talking about how it actually reduces on the water load of systems in particular communities. So I put these together basically so that it's just not rhetoric, but there's big studies done, a lot of people working on these, and then even within the EMWD itself, when you click on rebate programs for water conservation, if you go to tab tab 4, The first page that you go to has a laundry machine, a washing machine. It just kind of gives you an impression of like, well, this is a pretty important thing. If you talk to any, I guess, city planner, and one way to reduce loads on systems is through conservation. And then you have other districts. I put the Sequoia Water District on tab 5. They have a rebate program for commercial laundromats, giving them a $600 rebate per machine. And then you have on tab 6, Santa Barbara, the city of Santa Barbara, issued kind of a Water Hero Award in 2018 to a laundromat for water conservation that takes place from a laundry facility. You have the National Park Service on tab 7. They go into in-depth about the differences between non-energy...
Sir, if you could, we're a little past the three-minute mark, okay. So if you wanted to wrap up your thoughts.
Sure. To wrap it up, basically, like we did the Pledge of Allegiance before we stood up here, and I'd like to pursue my American dream myself and at my personal expense and risk. All the information here shows that the water load with the laundry facility will actually decrease, not increase, and going off of the numbers given to me, an argument could be made that a check should be written to me for $500,000 to $1 million as opposed to me writing a check for $138,000. So at the end of the day, I just need assistance on like having the EMD not really get out of my way, but not charge me $138,000 to start something that would actually reduce water usage in the collective and maybe even set a new standard. I mean, this is maybe newfound information. It was for me. Maybe it is for you as well. But I just kind of need to, and this is my method of petition. I've already gone through the process of talking to the district.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the information, well put together, and I think all the members of the board here appreciate the information you've given us today. So, and I would ask our general manager sometime in the future if we could maybe the board could get educated on some of the costs of these and what our fees actually go for.
Absolutely, President Pauley, and Frank, if I can get a copy of the binder as well, I'll take a look at it myself, and we'd be happy to further discuss your specific.
Yes, but that's business. My biggest question. As time goes on, my expenses
again,
are going
sir,
up.
If we could get it to the general manager, I just want to be respectful of all the times here. Very good. Our next person wishing to do public comment, I believe it's Dan Massett, sir.
Yeah, Massett.
Please come forward and. Thank you for coming today.
I gave you a letter that I had given to John Worth, and it outlined what I was looking to get. What I'm looking for is just a will serve letter, and I'll take it from there. The easements are in line. I really would like your help. I'm into the environment. I have 150 acres in this area that I'm putting aside and a few other acres I'm putting aside for animals. Since I retired, I've taken all my residential stuff and I've sold it all. But I kept the stuff that I'm going to pass. Well, I've actually passed it on to my kids. But what I'm trying to do is come up with a way of protecting the environment. We have a lot of animals that have gone extinct and are going extinct. And one of the things that you can, as a company, I mean, without water, you have nothing. I mean, it might as well be desert land. But the amount of water you need for certain animals to survive, and I'm talking red-legged frogs, Colorado River toads, I mean, the amount of animals that we've lost in the last maybe 10 years is all something to do with water. I'm a commercial. I was a commercial reptile collector. That's how I learned my business and learned all about animals in Southern California. Then I went into construction, and I worked for some of the wealthiest people. I do lakes, ponds, streams, artificial rock work. So I looked at how you could bring habitat back, and that's what I'm doing with my property. I'm bringing it back. I'm reintroducing the plants that have gone away, and I want to work with the animals. I need water at a reasonable rate, that letter lands at, and that's all I need. I'm not asking for anything from you. It would be nice if I had your help because recycled water is pretty much garbage water. It has to be changed. I've got all the equipment set up to do it. I can take it all and make it clean water, make it so an animal can live in it. As it is, recycled water is very, very dangerous, especially if you have recycled near, you know, let's say old folks' home, where you have lots of chemicals that go into the water. So I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to set up my treatment, but I do have experts on. But I also have another way. I've looked at your system really well in being a contractor. You have, at Four Seasons, you've got a big, gigantic water area. If I could, and you've got that, goes up to the tank. It's up there on your recycle tank. If I could get water from there during the flood time, I could probably get better water, and it's water that's just going to go down the drains anyway. So it would be nice to work with you guys to do this, but I don't need to. All I need is Will Serve letter, and I've been asking for that for over 2 years now. And I thank you for your time, but I really, that's all I'm looking
thank
for.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for coming today. With that, we will move on. It's to our general manager's report, Mr. Mowat.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. I wanted to give you some highlights of some of the recent activities and items that you already may be aware of, but I just wanted to highlight them further. Under new and ongoing items, as you're aware, on June 29th, the House Appropriations Committee passed a measure that includes funding for multiple EMWD infrastructure projects. We're just very pleased with the support that we've received from our House congressional delegation, Congressman Calvert, Congressman Takano, and Congressman Issa have all supported our request for STAG funding in the EPA budget. And specifically, in aggregate, we have been appropriated $8 million for our projects, $3.5 million by Congressman Takano for the Well 56 PFAS removal, $2.5 million by Congressman Calvert for Quail Valley septic to sewer conversion, and $2 million by Congressman Issa for the Wine Country sewer infrastructure. Very pleased with our congressional delegation championing and providing their support and commitment to this organization. And we did send thank you letters to each of them expressing our appreciation. On the Senate side, Senator Feinstein also advanced our request for $2 million for the Quail Valley septic to sewer, as well as Senator Padilla advanced $2 million for Quail Valley, as well as a $2 million project that we've requested for the Well 56 PFAS remediation. The markup on the Senate side for the appropriations measure is expected later this month, and of course then there'll be a reconciliation between the House measure and the Senate measure, and we will be providing support to the congressional and senators' staff accordingly. So again, very pleased with the outcome of our funding efforts on the federal side.
Joe, can I ask you
yes,
a question
please.
About that before you move on? So with the Senate ones, is that additive to the House amounts, or is it just get reconciled and it's just going to be one number?
That's a great question. As you know, the earmark funding recently was reintroduced last year. Last year, we received support on the House appropriation side. We didn't have any support from the Senate side. So for us, this year will be fairly new process. But my understanding in talking to our team back in D.C., Pete Evich from Venskoyak, is that there will be a reconciliation whereby we would request that the highest amount included, be it on the House side or the Senate side, would be the amount that would be advanced through a reconciliation bill. So to answer your question, we don't believe it's additive, but it would be reconciled to the highest amount contained within either the House or the Senate bill.
Right.
The next item I wanted to share with the board, as you know, as part of the American Rescue Plan funding due to the COVID period, the state established a low-income household water assistance program, or otherwise known as LIHWAP. And after the initial 4 weeks of the program operating, statewide, The LIWAP program received 345 applications. Of those 345, 75% were from Riverside County. And of all the applications processed for LIWAP within Riverside County, 60% of the funds were received by EMWD customers. And that's just a tremendous reflection of the efforts our public governmental affairs and our customer service staff working in partnership with the county to advocate on behalf of our customers. Essentially, EMWD's customers are the largest recipients statewide of the LIWAP funding to assist them with their water arrearages. So really pleased with the effort and the partnership we've had with Riverside County. And as I mentioned, just demonstrates the great job our team has been doing in promoting the programs to our customers. Next item, I wanted you to be aware that we are currently monitoring a proposed ballot initiative. Specifically, the initiative is called the Taxpayer Protection and Government Accountability Act, which is being sponsored by the California Business Roundtable. The proposed initiative, if it gets placed on the ballot, and they need to collect about a million signatures by August 2nd of this year to be placed on the general election November 2024. If they're able to do that, then this initiative, if approved by the voters, of course, would have detrimental effects on local government and special districts in being able to enact or modify taxes, assessments, fees, and property-related charges. As you're aware, there's already been a number of other initiatives approved by the voters in the past, including Prop 13, Prop 62, Prop 218, and Prop 26. All of them limit government's ability to create new taxes or increase existing ones. The California Special District Association has been leading a coalition to oppose this ballot initiative. At this point, our practice has been and will continue to be that we are not taking an official position on this ballot initiative. If and when the initiative makes it on the ballot, then obviously we'll bring this back to this board for further discussion and consideration. Under items of interest to the board, just wanted you to be aware that there's been ongoing discussions with both the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master Advisor as well as Lake Hemet Municipal Water District. Last week, we had a meeting to discuss the safe yield within the Hemet San Jacinto groundwater basin. And a little bit of context, the adjudicated basin had previously identified a safe yield per the stipulated judgment of 45,000 acre-feet per year. Recent modeling completed by the consultant hired by the water master has indicated that that yield may be somewhat lower based upon which data set that you would use. So per President Pauly's direction, we had a very detailed technical discussion with the advisor as well as Lake Hemet. And we basically posed a series of questions as far as the assumptions used in the groundwater modeling. Before the advisor approaches the Water Master Board, we think it's important for all of us to be comfortable with the data and with the assumptions used in the modeling. And so based on that discussion, the advisor's going back to the consultant to ask a little further questions because there was some data that was essentially not included in the modeling, especially what we saw as 2019-20 wet years that may have an impact on the safe yield calculation. He's also going to be reaching out to the Water Master Legal Counsel to understand, you know, if there are specific legal requirements to consider an adjustment to the safe yield. So more to come on that, but we are very much part of the process. And both us, our team, as well as Lake Hemet, are very much seeing things along the same way. We want to be very diligent and very thorough before any further recommendations are made to the Water Master Board. The next item under items of interest, as you're aware, on June 22nd, this board approved administrative code changes to incorporate the state's emergency conservation regulations, part of which included a ban on the use of potable water for non-functional turf irrigation. We had previously sent out a letter to our CII customers, commercial, institutional, industrial. That's who the ban impacts. We recently sent a second letter on June 22nd informing them of the state's emergency regulation and that if there is dedicated non-functional turf via a valve station that does not include irrigation of trees or perennial shrubs, then that is not permitted use of potable water. But beyond that, we have been doing outreach. We have been visiting sites, talking to the customers, informing them of what this ban is all about and how can we assist them. And to that end, our staff, our conservation staff, as well as public governmental affairs staff, we will be hosting a series of virtual meetings with the executives representing our CII customers. I think it's important for us to inform those executives of what this ban means and how can they potentially implement that ban and provide them the tools, including sample letter that they can then issue to their site supervisors, essentially giving them direction to isolate certain parts of their irrigated areas that serve non-functional turf, potentially how to separate that from trees or perennial shrubs. So we think the more tools we can provide our CII customers to implement this ban, the more successful we will be. And of course, we're also going to inform them again about the funding that we provide as well as Metropolitan provide relative to removal of non-functional turf. So it's a process, but I just want to let you know that we are implementing the ban on potable water use for non-functional turf for CII customers. Finally, I just wanted to mention my sincere appreciation to this board and to staff for coordinating, planning, and executing what I believe has been a tremendously successful dedication ceremony for the Paris to Desalter. Appreciate that the board's support. It was truly a team effort, and I want to give a shout-out to public governmental affairs team and operations team. We had tremendous attendance from many partners that we had on the program, and we had very favorable media coverage, both newspapers and television. So I wanted to share with you today one segment that aired on ABC News that I felt was really well done. And with that, if we can roll the tape, please.
On our Save Water Wednesdays, we are looking at ways to battle California's water crisis, and using groundwater can help, but in some areas, that water is just too salty to drink. Inland Empire Bureau Chief Robert Millen got a tour of a new groundwater desalination plant in Menifee.
In neighborhoods throughout Menifee and Sun City, there are signs everywhere that people are doing what they can to conserve water. And just up the street, folks at Eastern Municipal Water District are showing off their latest efforts to save water, their newest groundwater desalination facility, which can take groundwater that is too salty for consumption and make it suitable to drink.
With the opening of this facility this week, we will add the ability to service 15,000 households now with water that we're not importing from the Colorado River or the State Water Project.
Board President Phil Pauley says this new plant can treat about 5.5 million gallons of water per day. Water they'll no longer need to pull out of the Colorado River.
The water level is at the lowest since the Hoover Dam was built. That should be cautionary to everybody in Southern California that we need to figure out how to do local resources for our water.
The water that needs to be desalinated comes into this building through this pipe and then is run through these filters where a lot of the big stuff like dirt and sand is taken out of the water. It then goes through this pump here and across through these overhead pipes into all of these cylinders here where there are tiny membranes inside that separate the salt from the water. Then it goes out through this pipe where it needs to be decarbonated. That's the last step before the water is ready for public use.
Facilities like this are what which show that there's a different path.
Joaquin Esquivel is chairman of the State Water Resources Control Board. He acknowledges that in many rural parts of the state where the groundwater can become salty after decades and decades of farming, systems like this might not be cost effective. But here in Eastern Municipal Service Territory, 10% of the water now comes by way of desalination.
When we're in settings like this where we have communities, ratepayers that can, you know, contribute, and thankfully we have the state and feds as well to contribute dollars to ensure the affordability of water supplies like this, we can do great things.
Rob McMillan, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
So with that, again, I'm just very proud of this board and this organization for their steadfast commitment to local resources. That's truly visionary. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have on any of the items in this morning's report.
Yeah, well, first I would concur and compliment staff and the job that you did on the dedication event, and that coverage is tremendous. You did a great job, President Pauly, and just it was a really, really good event, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And also congratulations on the funding appropriations. I know that's a result of a lot of effort and meetings and just really having a relationship with those representatives, so that's good. And then I did want to comment on this ballot initiative. You know, it's like we had two public comments today, and I feel like these ballot initiatives sound good in their titles, but really what happens is it really restricts an agency like us to having any flexibility, to being creative and even accommodating certain things. It really restricts us. And so I'm glad that you're watching this, because I don't think these are really helpful to how we need to operate.
I agree. Thank you, Dr. Armstrong.
I would just say on the initiative, proposed initiative, we could take a position, but we couldn't actively oppose it except through AQUA or other associations.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
That's it.
Great.
I just wanted to say again to our PGA staff and everybody involved, That piece up there, normally you get news stories about how the drought's affecting and we all need to stop using water, but that was a real good piece to explain to the public that this agency actually takes steps to address these situations, and we will continue to do so. So, again, to April and everybody involved, that was very good. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
I have some great news to share in our efforts to streamline operations and cut costs using the technology we've invested in. During this year's Customer Service Week conference, staff attended a session hosted by Duke Energy where they discussed a notification program using a final text message to customers the morning of shutoff to prompt payment before a truck is rolled. We learned that their program had a service order cancellation rate of 30% on the day of shutoff. So Dan Howell and Charles Camrew brought back the idea, and within a month and a half, with assistance from information systems and other departments, initiated a new customer communication program which was named Text to Disco, and Disco stands for disconnection. The program, which started last Wednesday, is designed to send a final text message to delinquent customers the morning their account is scheduled for a non-payment disconnection. The goal of the program is to prompt customers to contact the district to make a payment or set up a payment plan, which in turn, in most cases, will automatically cancel the non-payment disconnection service order. So as of yesterday, we are only 4 days in, the program has generated 196 text messages to delinquent accounts that were scheduled for disconnection, and these text messages resulted in 84 or 43% service order cancellations, again, following the customer making a payment or setting up a payment plan. Each service order cancellation is saving the district potentially two truck rolls, one to disconnect water service and the other to restore the service once the customer has addressed the payment past due bill. With each truck roll costing the district approximately $60. Now, that was costed before the fuel hikes. There are substantial savings expected. In our early estimations with the reduced truck rolls, we are estimating conservatively that implementation of the text-to-disco program will generate savings to EMWD of at least $500,000 a year. I would like to give a big thank you to all involved in implementing this text-to-disco program, and we have Dan Howell here today if you have any questions or would like any more details on the program. But what great work coming out of a conference, so it paid for the conference a hundredfold. So just thank you.
No, good report.
I would just say we have a very professional staff, and they delve into the newest technology, and it benefits us. So I'm just like the other, the desalination. We're very pleased with everyone's work.
Great.
Congrats. That's great.
Thank you for that. Nick, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, thank you. I do have one update. Last week, Thursday of last week, we held our second quarterly ad hoc committee with the City of Paris. This is a process in which we're looking at the potential consolidation of the city's water and sewer systems with Eastern. And just as a reminder, the ad hoc committee consists of Director Slauson and Director Armstrong for us. And on the city side, it's Mayor Michael Vargas and Councilwoman Rita Rogers. And then the executive staff participates in those discussions. And we have executive staff from engineering, operation and maintenance, finance, as well as legal. And this is a process where Eastern's doing its due diligence. We're having a careful look at the city's water and sewer systems best understand the assets and liabilities that we may need to consider as we potentially consolidate the systems together. And specifically, we're looking at issues such as groundwater rights, the value of that groundwater, the ability to access any excess groundwater. We're looking at the water and sewer systems conditions, understanding what standards those systems are at and what potential capital improvements may be necessary to bring them in par with Eastern standards. We're looking at other aspects such as real assets, property that might be excess to the city's needs that could be of value to Eastern as we consolidate, as well as potentially where infrastructure is in conflict with some of the real estate assets the city has, namely infrastructure that's not in the public right-of-way. They may not have easements for that would need to be addressed in the future. And then there's questions of the legal provisions necessary for transfers. Specifically, questions have come up with regards to what is the LAFCO process? Is a public vote required? Are there any potential restrictions on rate increases associated with past lawsuits and settlements that the city has entered into? I will say that the answers to those questions we're working our way through, and is no, there is no LAFCO process that will be required. It doesn't appear that a public vote will be necessary, and it doesn't appear that rate increases would be restricted. So all this is being done and will be brought and culminated with a financial assessment. Our finance team will then gather the information that these efforts are providing, looking at the costs that we envision necessary to consolidate and determine what this means financially, what those future rate increases to bring the city's rates in par with Eastern, what that would take. So I thought it was a really good discussion. We're making a lot of headway. When we embarked upon this, we envisioned that this could potentially be up to a one-year process. As I said, this is the second quarterly meeting. We have the next one scheduled for mid-September. And by then, I think a lot of these assessments and studies will have concluded, and we'll be feeding information into finance and looking at the financial model and the assessment of that. So, again, I appreciate Directors Slauson and Armstrong's participation in those discussions, but a lot more to come.
All right. Thank you.
No updates from me, nothing. President Pauly.
Matt?
Good morning. I just wanted to share with you all that this year, again, we have a very healthy or strong demand for recycled water. Our allocation year starts in April. And in the first 2 months, we've sold about 1,400 acre-feet more than the average for the prior 2 years, which represents about a 26% increase. Mm-hmm. And we're currently tallying up data for June, so I can come back to you with that at a later time. But last week, we were seeing demands of about 54 MGD, and our storage is currently at 38%, which is a little lower than the last few years. So we're monitoring things closely and staying in communication with our customers to coordinate allocations and consumption, and we'll keep you informed as the season continues.
Very good. Any questions on that? See none. Thank you all for that. We will now go on to item 3 on the agenda, which is our consent calendar. Do we have any members of the board that would like to pull an item for separate discussion or separate vote? See none.
I move approval.
Move approval by Director Slauson.
Second.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote on the consent calendar, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
passes 4-0 with Director Record absent today. Then we'll go on to item 4, which is our action calendar. The first item is item A, which is to approve and authorize an interagency agreement with the City of Murrieta, an agreement with Albert A. Webb and Associates for $193,000 for the Los Alamos Hills Water Facilities Project and an additional appropriation of $355,000. And, Nick, you're going to present this morning.
I will.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Pauly, directors. I'm pleased to be here to present the Los Alamos Hills Water Facilities Project. I've been before you previously a number of times giving you updates on this, and I'm pleased to be here today to bring this item forward, which will begin the process of implementing this project. So just very quickly in the way of a background, you can see from the graphic here, the Los Alamos Hills area is a rural residential community consisting of about 49 properties, 44 of which have homes built on and are occupied. It's in the northeasterly part of the city of Murrieta. And where the blue arrow is pointing, this Los Alamos Hills community is within an area that we refer to as the keyhole. The keyhole is a hole within the greater eastern service area that is about 1,000 acres that is not annexed into eastern or metropolitan. So properties in this area do not have a municipal water supply and rely on privately pumped wells. About a year ago, a little less, the city of Murrieta reached out to us, sharing some concerns that have been expressed by communities in the Los Alamos area with regards to dry well conditions or potentially dry well conditions, and they reached out to us to see, you know, what can potentially be done to help address this. And earlier this year, they came forward offering $3 million of ARPA funding that they had secured to help support implementation of a project that would help address some of these concerns. So in response to those concerns, we looked at the situation. Prepared a feasibility study to look at potentially, you know, what we could do, how we would bring infrastructure into this area to help provide a water supply. The objectives here was to obviously address the community issues, bring a municipal water service that would include fire flow, extend water infrastructure into this area and increase reliability. And in doing so, and working closely with the city, we're strengthening the partnership and collaboration that we have in place. The graphic here shows the proposed plan to address the Los Alamos Hills community. It's a pretty straightforward loop system that would then extend a water pipeline from Eastern's current system down to Los Alamos Road. We would then extend a 12-inch water pipeline northeasterly up Los Alamos, and then loop back around the community down Mason Road, Mary Place, and then tie back into Los Alamos from Celia Road. This loop system would then front those 49 properties, and then the connection could be made to provide water service. I just point out the red line that's shown extending from our system up Los Alamos is sized at 12-inch. This would then give us the ability, if and when in the future we need to extend this system further up the keyhole area. So as I said, the keyhole is not annexed, about 1,000 acres of the keyhole. The Los Alamos area shown in light blue is about 166 acres to provide this water service. This area would have to be annexed into both metropolitan and eastern. And so going forward, we would be looking to work with the city in a collaborative way to, you know, reach out to the community, let them know that this is an opportunity that would be made available to them, gauge their interest, and get commitments to annex into Eastern and Metropolitan. We envision that a special benefit assessment financing program will be developed for the property owners to connect into and for us to recover the costs and fees associated with the annexation. So in evaluating the feasibility for this, we reached out to Albert Webb and Associates to do a study to look at the technical requirements for this loop system, develop a scope of work for the project, and develop a cost estimate. And as such, having accomplished that, we desire to continue with Web Services to prepare the necessary designs and contracts for us to move forward with a construction project to construct this. Web's scope of work would include all necessary field investigations, a preliminary and final design and development of contract documents, additional services to be performed by Webb and Associates or other sub-consultants would include surveying, geotechnical investigations, potholing, and then separately we'll have to prepare necessary environmental documents. The approximate fee for these services is $195,000. So looking at our cost estimate for the project, when we prepared the feasibility study, this is the same graphic that I shared with you last time. I'm pleased to say that we firmed up our numbers and we're still looking at the same estimates. A capital cost inclusive of design, construction, contract administration, and all other soft costs associated with the project is $3.5 million. And this does include the oversizing for the pipeline in Los Alamos. Out of that 3.5, we're looking for the city to contribute $3 million to that cost. And then separately, in parallel with the effort, is the LAFCO and annexation costs based on today's fees and charges. The estimate for that is $1.3 million. I do want to point out that there are additional costs for connecting into the system, which are not included in here, and that includes the connection fees and any on-site, on-property residential plumbing that may be necessary to extend this water service to the homes in this area. So here's the schedule, and I've asked the team to develop an aggressive schedule, given that this is ARPA funded to a great extent, and there are deadlines that come with execution of the project with these funds. The deadline to have the project complete is December 31st, 2026, shown by the star on this graphic, and our aggressive schedule will have this project done well in advance of that, a couple of years in advance. So we're looking seriously at how we can expedite this. So overall, this shows the necessary design, the CEQA, the construction, which will be done by the first quarter of 2024, with a lot of float to the ARPA funding deadline. Also shown on here, which I want to touch upon, is the timeline for the annexation, is the LAFCO and annexation process. Last time I presented this, I shared that typically, based on our experience, and we've done a number of these, we see that process takes somewhere in the order of 14 to 18 months. Question, I think, from President Pauly was, why is that? And since then, I want to let you know that we have had a hard look at that, and there's a series of steps which starts with CEQA, developing legals and plat maps and applications, and then this board would then have to approve resolutions that would then be submitted to LAFCO and Metropolitan. Then they have their process of going to their committees and boards for review and consideration and approval of those. And it's a sequential process. LAFCO won't do anything until they have those resolutions of approval from this board and from Metropolitan. And then when it gets to LAFCO, there's a 4 to 5 month process. 3 months of that putting the item out for public review. So there's a series of steps along the way. Chris Teague is our in-house expert and has performed a number of these. And based on the feedback that we've got, he has already begun discussions with Metropolitan LAFCO to see, are there any creative ways that we could accelerate the process? And he is identifying there are some shortcuts that we could take. And given that, we're envisioning that this will be Eastern will be the applicant for this process, We will drive the process. We will be funding that and seeking recovery through the financing programs that we put in place. And given that this is an area within the greater Eastern Service area, and there is no other municipal water purveyor that can provide this service, there is very, very little risk associated with any protest. So we may very well be able to get to the point once we have this board's and Metropolitan's board's approval of the resolutions and commitment to move forward, that we could actually, if the infrastructure is in the ground, go ahead and connect, because LAFCO really becomes a formality at that point. But having said that, I will say that we are looking at it, and we're always looking for opportunities to be more effective in the execution of projects. It's really a moot point, because the timeline that we're seeing for annexation process, as you can see here, is going to run parallel and concurrent with the design and construction, and no connections can be made until the infrastructure is in the ground. So LAFCO will conclude, and the annexation process will conclude, probably well before design and construction. So with that, today's recommendation is for approval and authorization for execution by the general manager for a contract with Albert Webb and Associates for design engineering services in support of the project in the amount of $193,877. Execution by the general manager of an interagency financial contribution agreement with the City of Murrieta for $3 million, subject to non-substantive changes. And I will say that the city is scheduled to take the proposed agreement for their contribution of $3 million to their council next month. Their council is dark this month, so they'll take that the first opportunity in August. Also, administrative award of other necessary contracts in support of the project. An additional appropriation in the amount of $355,000 to fund the project through the bid and water phase for a total appropriation of $407,800. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this?
I just had a couple of things, Nick. One, I think the sooner we can get the necessary resolutions before this board, the happier I think I would be. When this came before me last year, when a couple of council members from Murrieta contacted me, and the fact that this is probably less than 2 miles from my front door, that they were providing bottled water to people because their wells ran dry, I'm still a little stunned at the bureaucratic length of time it will get these people connected, but it is what it is. So whatever this board can do to move this forward, that would be great. Also, if we could put on my calendar, I'd like to go to that Murrieta meeting, if possible, when this is discussed before the City Council of Murrieta. So
excellent. Thank you.
Thanks. I will make the motion to pass this.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Dr. Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent from the meeting today. Thank you, Nick, on that. We will move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize an agreement with Krieger and Stewart for $135,000 for the final design of the Menifee Road Water Pipeline and an appropriation in the amount of $364,000. Mr. Kowalski, I believe you have this and the next item.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Good morning, President Pauly, fellow members of the board.
Let me note for the record, because I believe you have a conflict with Krieger and Stewart.
Well, it's been some time since we actually did business with Krieger and Stewart, but I think, to be safe, I'm going to go ahead and recuse myself on this one at least one more time.
All right, so let the record reflect that Director Corona is leaving the dais for this item. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm happy to present our Menifee Road Water Pipeline project. By way of location, the project is located just 2 miles east of us here at headquarters north of Highway 74, just above Watson Road along Menifee Road. It's a part of our current conveyance project that's Matthews, Romoland booster stations, as well as the related conveyance. This particular project will support local development and connect to future development contributed pipelines that are part of the Menifee Ranch development that is south of 74, there illustrated in green. Again, the proposed project will provide about a mile of 24-inch diameter transmission pipeline that, again, will provide the appropriate conveyance facilities for current and planned development. And at this time, this particular pipeline is a part of a current conveyance project, the preliminary design. That effort is done for the pipeline, so we're looking to now extract that and repackage it as a standalone project. We want to accelerate that project to meet the timelines for the development in the area. So we reached out to Krieger and Stewart to receive a fee and scope of work for the project. They were previously competitively selected for this conveyance project. And with that, we negotiated a scope and fee for final design to advance preparation of contract documents and traffic control plans. We're able to negotiate a fee for the separate concurrent pipeline project for $136,000, which is commiserate with the lesser level of effort. If approved today, we look to advance the project as soon as possible. We'll complete in about a year's time and then soon after put out to bid. We look to initiate construction in late 2023 and then complete about a year later. That completion will be just in time for the development's deliverables for their initial phases of commercial and residential. With that, our recommendation today is to advance a contract with Krieger and Stewart for the design of the Menifee Road water pipeline, to advance administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete this work, and then our request today is appropriation of $364,000 to complete the project through the bid award phase.
Very good. Any questions on this item? Would you like to make a motion, Director Armstrong?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Motion by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauling?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 3-0 with Director Record absent and Director Corona recusing himself from the item. If we could invite Director Corona back to the dais, we will move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize an agreement with Stantec Consulting Services Incorporated for $249,000 for a preliminary and final design of the Rice Road Pipeline at Salt Creek and an appropriation of $454,000. Your second item.
Second item, Rice Road Pipeline. Before I get started, I'd like to introduce our guest today from Stantec Consulting, our pipeline expert, Mr. Jeff Endersby.
Oh, thank you very much for attending today. I always appreciate it when we have people to come to our board meeting that we're going to do business with. So thank you so much, sir.
Okay, with that, by way of background, the project is located in the Winchester area. It's situated between Olive Avenue and Domingone Parkway along Rice Road, and we're looking to advance a crossing of Salt Creek at this location. At this time, the current pipeline is limited in its conveyance capacity, and we need to add conveyance capacity to accommodate existing and future development. Specifically, we're looking to advance a 700 linear foot, 18-inch diameter crossing. We look to advance this crossing using trenchless technologies. This project, again, will improve conveyance in the area, and it's subject to our development cost participation agreement. So we're looking to get reimbursement for these efforts. Concurrent with the potable pipeline, we look to advance also the recycled water crossing. That would be a little bit longer, 850 feet of 18-inch diameter pipeline. We'd also utilize trenchless technologies for this crossing. Again, it would support existing and proposed development as well as support the future purified water replenishment project. By advancing both pipelines at the same time, we'll look to gain efficiencies in design and construction and minimize future community impacts. The scope of work for this effort is typical for the final design. We're looking to advance preliminary and final preparation of contract documents. In this process, we would do a special trenchless evaluation to ensure we're providing the appropriate trenchless method for the site conditions. In addition to that, we're looking to advance certain optional tasks to support that trenchless technology, which is temporary monitoring wells and sampling of those wells as well. We reached out to our as-needed services contractors for design services. We received three proposals, and with that, Stantec Consulting was deemed the best value and best firm to advance this work. And reason being is they recently supported us in our Murrieta Road pipeline project, a very similar trenchless crossing, which is essentially right next to the desalter, also crossing Salt Creek. It's essentially the same design staff. In addition to the main scope of work, they'll also utilize as-needed consultants for survey, geotech, and potholing. With that, we look to advance the project upon award today and complete the project in about a year's time, put the project soon out to bid, and then initiate construction probably in late 2023. With that, our recommendation today is to advance a contract with Stantec Consulting for advancement of the Rice Road Pipeline Project, the amount of approximately $250,000. Also advance administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete this work. And then our request today is for appropriation, the amount of $455,000 to complete the work through bid award phase. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Greg? Nope. Since we have a guest here, would you like to take a quick minute? I know we seem to be doing more business with your firm. If you want to come up and introduce yourself and your firm real quick, be happy to have you do it.
Yeah, my name is Jeff Hendersby. I'm a PE, specialize in water and wastewater conveyance projects with Stantec Consulting. We're an international company headquartered in Canada and offices throughout the United States and other parts of the world. So we have trenchless experts on our staff, and they'll be supporting me in this project. So appreciate being here today.
Very good. Thank you for coming today. Appreciate the introduction of the company. There are no questions. I had one other comment. Could I, April, can we make sure that this gets highlighted at the Winchester MAC this month, that this project gets, I am going to be out of town, not able to attend, but I would like, I think the MAC would like to know that we've done something here on this. So appreciate that. With that, I will, I'll make the motion on this item. Seconded by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you so much for the presentation this morning. We will go on to item D, which is to adopt a proposed resolution of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District reaffirming the policy concerning payment of costs associated with statement of qualifications for candidates for the Board of Eastern Municipal Water District. Mr. Mowad.
Good morning again, President Pauly, members of the board. With the upcoming elections in November of this year, the County Riverside Registrar's Office has reached out to us to clarify district policy relative to payment of fees associated with any candidate's statement of qualifications. In the past, this board has taken the approach of reaffirming our past practices whereby candidates for any Board of Directors division would pay their own way in terms of administrative cost for the statement of qualifications. To that end, we have prepared a resolution whereby, if approved by this board, we would communicate to the county that, in fact, we will continue our previous practice requiring candidates to pay such cost. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions this board may have.
Questions? Could I get a motion and a second?
I'll make
motion
that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Take us to item 5 on our agenda, which are informational items. Item A is to evaluate additional solar photovoltaic generation opportunities. Dan, you're going to do this for us this morning.
I am. Thank you. Our energy manager, Sam Robinson, was unable to attend today, so I'm happy to present this in his absence. So a very brief update on our process now for reviewing some additional solar photovoltaic opportunities here at the district. As you may know, by way of background, we have completed three phases of our solar program. in all those total over 22 megawatts of renewable generation. We produce over 58 million kilowatt hours of electricity per year. And just for perspective, we purchase roughly 115 million kilowatt hours from the utility per year. So a little bit of perspective there. We're generating 58.3 of our own power. So again, by way of background, as you may know back in, or may recall, back in 2016, the board approved a contract with Terra Verde Energy to complete our Phase 3 solar feasibility study. That was a very comprehensive analysis. At that time, we looked at literally all 259 EMWD utility accounts. We explored net energy metering rules and so forth under the 2.0, net energy metering 2.0. And we also considered the RESBCT project that was successfully implemented in San Jacinto. The results were for NEM 2.0 opportunities that we've now completed and the RESBCT project, which alone is 5 megawatts of solar generation. So that Phase 3 projects in all, those Phase 3 projects were completed in earlier this year. And the projection, original projection of $40 million in savings under the 25-year term of our power purchase agreement has actually now risen due to increased utility rates, mostly. And that figure is now over $63 million in savings for the district over that 25-year term. So very successful. And I think it was President Pauley when we mentioned this in our recent update on our battery energy storage project that requested this informational update regarding solar. So why are we looking at this now? Factors for looking at these new opportunities. So as mentioned, the utilities continue to increase rates. We're looking at an additional 12% rate increase by the end of this year. Net energy metering 3.0 is on the horizon. Indications are that that will not be as favorable to solar projects, but we need to consider that in any future implementations. The investment tax credit was extended. That's good through the end of 2023, which benefits power purchase agreement type projects and providing that ITC credit. Developers are able to realize the benefit of that tax credit, which is then passed along through lower PPA rates. And then as we presented, I believe, 2 months ago now, increased value from our renewable energy credits. We were very successful in marketing the Phase 3 credit that are generated through our solar projects, realizing over $1 million of savings in 3 years or revenue in 3 years under that program. We expect that to continue. So it's a good time for us to be looking at some next steps. So with that, we've taken an initial cut at and identified about 36 locations where we can either successfully expand existing solar or consider new solar opportunities. And really what we're doing is leveraging our Phase 3 study that Terra Verde completed beginning in that 2016 time frame. So the first Phase 1, if you will, of this latest investigation is a very high-level overview that Terra Verde will complete on our behalf to take a look at these locations in particular using the data and updating the data that was developed last time during the Phase 3 analysis and looking at new operations and trends and initial system sizing. The cost is nominal for that update, focusing on those 36 locations of $12,600. Resulting from that, we anticipate that there will be some opportunities that surface, and we would then pursue a more detailed and a comprehensive feasibility analysis to identify any project opportunities there. That would include system layout, interconnection issues, financial modeling that we would then present back to our board. The pricing for that phase of the assessment would be based on the number of locations that we identified in that first cut, if you will. So, for example, as I've shown here, if we identify 12 locations, the cost of that feasibility assessment would be $78,500. If we identify six locations, it would be $48,500. I think this is quite beneficial. We are leveraging that work that has already been done. It's just refreshing that and taking a deeper dive under current circumstances. So with that, again, this is informational. There's no approval necessary for this item, but our next steps will be to contract with Terra Verde to complete that phase one and update that feasibility study focusing on those 36 locations. We hope to then move forward into that more comprehensive and detailed analysis and bring that back to the board with findings and recommendations, hopefully by the fall of this year. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I would say I think this has been a proven great investment, so I'd certainly support this. And I can't help but say I think I read the late Aretha Franklin said she really supported the RESBCT program. So I can't let that pass.
Yes.
I would not want you to let that pass now. I just want to say again, the investments that this district made years ago, I think the one thing I would want to do is always remind our ratepayers that we have put the solar. It's good, clean energy. I'm not sure people understand the nexus between the energy it takes to deliver water to your household and what we have done to lower the footprint on that. And again, those Edison rates, what was 12%?
12% by the end of this year, yeah.
That is substantial. So thank you for all we do, and I do appreciate the great staff work on our solar investment. So thank you for the update on that. All right. We will go to item B, which is a PFAS regulatory update. Javier, you're going to do this for us this morning?
Yes, I will.
Very good. Thank you, and welcome.
Welcome. Good morning, President Pauley and other board members. I'm here to present the update on PFAS regulation, specifically EPA's interim health advisory. Just a quick review, PFAS, or per or polyfluoroalkylene substance, are chemicals with very strong carbon-fluorine bonds. There are thousands of different variations of PFAS chemicals. They are all man-made and was considered a miracle chemical created in 1940 because the chemicals are hydrophobic, repelling water, as well as oleophobic, which is repelling oils. For this, they were used for oil stains and water-resistant materials. Again, because of this resistance property, PFAS was used in nearly every aspect of the industry. Most notably are the firefighting capabilities used in aqueous film-forming foam, water-resistant clothing, and particularly the frying pans. Here is a slide of the history of PFOA, or perfluorooctanoic acid, and PFOS, perfluorooctane sulfonoic acid. In particular, the latest EPA interim advisory is highlighted in yellow there. It was issued on June 15. The EPA interim health advisory for PFOA is 0.004 parts per trillion, and for PFOS is at 0.02 parts per trillion. Again, this was issued for future regulatory actions, meaning the MCL that they're looking to get. I will explain further in the next couple slides the other additions for the health advisory. Again, parts per trillion is equivalent to 1 grain of sand in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. The bold, just above the highlighted, are still the state notification response levels and are still enforceable regulatory that apply. Additionally, EPA issued other health advisories for PFBS, the perfluorobutane sulfonate, at 2,000 parts per trillion. And above that also is the state notification response level that still exists, and they're highlighted in bold there. And one last EPA health advisory is the Gen X chemicals at 10 parts per trillion. Gen X are a group of PFAS with what they call an HFPO dimer acid and ammonia salt. The health advisory is used to indicate the level of drinking water contaminants below which adverse health effects are not expected to occur and non-enforceable. Public notice is recommended, and no action currently right now from DDW is required of that. Again, what they're doing with the interim health advisory is a step towards creating an MCL. Now, looking specifically at PFOA and PFOS, the interim health advisory, again, is 0.004 parts per trillion for PFOA and then 0.02 for PFOS. It should be noted that the reporting limit for these, based on what we call a method 537.1, is at 4 parts per trillion for PFOA as well as 4 for PFOS. If you, that is higher than the interim health advisory. In fact, the instrument method detection limit only gets down to about 0.6 and 0.9 for those constituents. So what it's indicating here is that detection level, if we have any detection, it would be above the interim health advisory. You're wondering why did they get so low below the instrument level? Well, that is based on, like I mentioned before, the health-based statistics on there. So that's how they determine that. So if we look at the district, most of our water sources are non-detect. Imported water, Mills and Skinner. Our East Valley wells are all non-detect. Our Hemet water filtration that gets State Water Project is non-detect, as well as our Paris water filtration plants. We do have a well 55 that's blended with our Paris water filtration plant, but because of the blend ratio, it's also at non-detect. So there are two sources that we do have that are detected just below the notification level, which is well 57, as well as the Paris South desalter wells that we have. Obviously, those are being treated through our RO facility to below the notification level. I'll speak a little bit later about well 59 and 56, also the impacts on those. So what is our monitoring requirements now for PFAS? Well, currently, because our conditions with well 59 and the Air Force and DDW being involved with that, we have to monitor well 59 and the treatment facilities. Additionally, the desalter wells and the desalination facilities has requirements for monitoring. One thing to note, next year, EPA is going to start what's called the UCMR, which is the unregulated contaminated monitoring rule that will look at 29 PFAS compounds. And it'll start from 2023 and it'll go through 2025. The UCMR is a way that the EPA looks at chemicals that need to be regulated for future. So they're getting their information by doing this study. It should be noted that in our consumer confidence report, we have been providing the customers PFAS information already. So we already have been providing this reporting since 2014. And then this was reported from the previous UCMR4 study where we looked at PFOA and PFOS. The next 2022 CCR will include PFAS reporting. Specifically, we came to the board last month on the exceedent notification limit of well 59, so that will be included in our CCR publication. Now, going to well 59 and 56, here is a diagram of the study that March Air Force had done. It is a plume delineation, which goes about 2.4 miles to the south and about 1.5 miles east of March Air Force Base. Mind you, the level that we're looking at the lowest level here, is at 70 parts per trillion. Again, when we're looking at the new health advisories, it's much lower. It's 100 to 1,000 times lower on this. If you look at it, there's the highlight of well 59. It's just south of March Air Force Base, and is within a half a mile is well 56 on there. So currently what we have with well 59 is a GAC, or granulated active carbon treatment facility, specifically for PFOA and PFOS. Now the replacement, according to our ESCA 3, is based on that 70 parts per trillion combination of PFOA, PFOS. Again, this was the previous health advisory. We do have, in the past, we'd had multiple environmental service cooperation agreement. Initially, when this first came out as a health advisory at 70, we deactivated our well 59. And in doing so, the March Air Force Base, or the Air Force, financially compensated us for the replacement water for that, as well as two service connection of private wells that were disconnected too. Our second ESCA was for the design, construction, and the treatment plant. And the final one was now the operation and maintenance of that treatment facility. In total, the cost for those F3 ESCA was $13.1 million. that we received from the Air Force. Speaking of the Air Force, they did reach out to us several weeks ago right after this announcement by EPA. So we actually had a meeting with them this morning. They are currently waiting for direction from the Office of Secretary of Defense to develop what needs to be next. So right now they are on hold. However, the meeting that we have is very promising. We did provide our interest, which was that new trigger levels of our concerns. Because it's based on the 70, we wanted to make sure that we are getting below that notification level or even that non-detect at our final. We would like them to recognize Well 56, especially since it's in that plume delineation, and that they will do some type of treatment because of that. And finally is the other wells. There are the further wells that we have further south and southeast, Well 57 and Well 55. That could be under consideration on that. But yet, this was just the start, and it was nice that they did reach out to us to initiate this conversation with us. Other things that we're doing is we are working with Water UCI, or UC Irvine Industry, University Research Center study. They are conducting a PFAS source tracking in sewer sheds. So they're looking up the sewer to find out where and the amount of where the PFAS is coming. And just recently, we are starting that PFAS regional study with SAPA, and it'll be a multi-phase study of the Upper Santa Ana watershed. And with that, I'll take any additional questions.
President Pauly, if maybe I can add just a little bit more to Al's update. Great update, by the way, Al. If we can go back to slide 9 for a second. What I wanted to share with the board is that this evolving regulatory issue with PFAS is going to have impacts on our system. And especially, we anticipate that sometime next year, the EPA may establish an MCL. So far, with the new health advisory essentially being lowered for PFOA and PFOS to non-detect, we believe gives us the basis to reach back out to the Air Force and ask for their financial participation specifically for Well 56. In the past, we decommissioned Well 56, and it's been decommissioned for more than 3 years at this point. We had, in concert with working with our legal counsel, had submitted requests to the Air Force in the past asking them for ESCA agreement for Well 56, and at that time, they rejected our request because they said it does not exceed the concentrations detected in Well 56, do not exceed the federal health advisory of 70. Well, now the federal health advisory has been lowered to essentially non-detect. So we will be working closely with our legal counsel to re-engage with the Air Force to make the case, as Al mentioned, not only for Well 56, which we believe is very self-evident. The plume that you see there on the slide was developed by the Air Force based on the 70 parts per trillion. This now has to be modified, in my opinion, to really understand what is the extent of the plume to the new health advisory of non-detect, or basically the fraction that Al mentioned. Beyond Well 56, as Al mentioned, there is potentially an impact on our brackish wells that feed our desalters. Now, as you know, the RO does remove PFAS, but we have a bypass around the RO of 20%. So we need to manage through that, either provide treatment for that bypass or shut off certain wells. Now, so far, the state has not reacted to the federal health advisory being lowered. And my opinion is that the state is really trying to grapple with this because this has wide-ranging impacts, especially on smaller water systems throughout the state that rely on groundwater resources that may be impacted by trace amounts of PFAS. And given the current drought conditions, I think those limited water supplies for many of those small systems are going to be further constrained. So I personally believe the state is trying to define a path forward in responding to the federal health advisory. But there's more to come on this issue. That's why we wanted to bring this issue to your attention now as we continue to partner with the Air Force and, of course, work with the state to better understand the ramifications of the new federal health advisory. With that, all of us here would be more than happy to answer any questions.
I had a question, I guess. The slide that you had, if you can go back, that had the chronology of mm-hmm. the EPA requirements, started in 2009. So it was 400 parts per trillion, the PFOA, and now it's 0.004. What is that? Is that 1/1,000th of what it used to be, or
Going with 3030? Yeah, that's 1,000,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just pointing it out.
Joe, on the Well 56 issue, might we want to reach out to Congressmen DeCano and Calvert and see if they could maybe do a letter to the Air Force on our behalf to ask that request? Because I think from your update, it's very reasonable that the Air Force now has to participate. And as we saw, groundwater during this drought is becoming more essential. And the fact that we've invested in groundwater resources, I want the Air Force to understand that's a good part of our water portfolio.
Absolutely, and that's a great point, President Pauly. And I think, to your point, Congressman Takano and Calvers have been supporters of this organization and other neighboring agencies dealing with, specifically with PFAS. As I mentioned earlier this morning, Congressman Takano has included $3.6 million for PFAS treatment at Well 56. Now, that's a significant amount of funding to help us to deal with that effort, but it doesn't necessarily address the fact that the well has been offline for a number of years. We've had to import water at a cost to our ratepayers during that time. So we believe a more comprehensive solution is what we partnered with the Air Force on Well 59. We believe that is the model for our partnership with the Air Force, whereby, as Al mentioned, there would be a sequence of different ESCA agreements to make us financially whole. But to your point, we will absolutely reach out to our electeds, to our House representatives, and explain to them where we're at and see if they can help us with those discussions with the Air Force.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Great, great presentation. I'd like to be up to speed on all of this. We'll now go to item 6 on our agenda, which is to receive and file various reports. I'll make a motion on that.
Second
by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Records absent from the meeting. That will take us to our calendar review. I do not see Jennifer here, but why don't we go ahead and do board reports and we'll come back to Jennifer. She's on her way down. We will start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. Attended the Riverside County Water Task Force meeting, which is good. The theme there was tomorrow's solutions today, and we got an update from the U.S. EPA Office of Water representative here in California, as well as Inland Empire Utility Agency and some representatives from Aqua. The CalDESAL meeting, just a couple quick updates from that. Looks like the Doheny DESAL project will go before the Coastal Commission for review in October. It also sounded like the representative from Poseidon said that they're not going to continue pursuing the Huntington Beach project, look for opportunities elsewhere. And so CalDESAL is looking to partner with the Coastal Commission on studying the effects and benefits of ocean water desal. Paris 2 desalter, again, just that was really great event, and congratulations on that. The Western Riverside Council Government's General Assembly, that was really a good event. I had no idea it was going to be that huge, and got to meet the WAS like everybody else here did. He was a very interesting guy. But I thought that was really good, and a lot of important people there, and so I appreciate the opportunity to attend that. Good update with our general manager, and already covered the Eastern and the City of Paris, but I think that it really appears to be a really cooperative effort, and I know all of these analyses are going to give us all the information to know what we would be inheriting if we were to consolidate that so we can make a good decision. So I just appreciate, you know, all of our efforts and your leadership on that, Nick. That's it.
All right. Director Corona.
Okay. The City of Murrieta Council meeting went off really well. The local districts all were there. Robin, Roxanne did a great job for Eastern. She actually did most of the answering of questions that were put forward by the council. And before I covered the desalter ribbon cutting, there was also an article in today's Press Enterprise on it. It was kind of focused on the Menifee folks, but it was had quotes from Joe, and everything was really good. And my update with the general manager was good as usual.
All right, thank you. I attended the IE Works board meeting to get some updates on some of the programmatic things they're doing for the youth. Again, really appreciate that we're involved in that. Under my treasurership with the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master, we had a meeting with the advisor, Laura and Joe and myself, just to make sure that some of the accounting procedures are in line with the accepted standards, and I think that that all came out well. Paris 2 desalter ribbon cutting, and enough's been said on that, but again, a fantastic event. WRCOG General Assembly, I, with everybody else, thought it was a fascinating evening. I have to say that the chairman of the organization did a fantastic job in interviewing. It was very interesting with Steve Wozniak, some of the history of Apple, and getting a little one-on-one to talk to him. But I wasn't going to invite him to come over and take Joe's job. So, but I'm glad. I it is fascinating to me that people like that that have a history where, you know, we all carried these devices, and to meet people that had the history of getting that organization launched was very good. Good for the area. I did not attend the Hemet San Jacinto Chamber of Commerce. I did attend an update meeting with some of our PGA staff to get a briefing on some of the statewide things happening. Apparently, we need to make the Tamale Factory in Riverside the official restaurant of EMWD because I ran into the general manager having lunch there the same day. So anyway, that was all good. Director Record is not here to give an update. So Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended an update with our general manager, and just nice to have some additional detail on upcoming agenda items. Attended the Water Task Force, Director Armstrong just detailed that. It was a good program. SOPA hearing, SOPA meeting. We had a legislative report. Brian discussed brine land rates, a statement of investment policy. We had a weather modification initial study approval. Hired a network coordinator and approved 5% COLA and 4% merit increases for employees. Attended Wake Up. That was Ido Benzivi did a presentation of his proposed revisions to a large couple thousand acre project in Marina Valley. It's not the Highland Fairview World Logistics Center, though. It's another one. RCC Foundation. Had an emergency meeting or a special meeting with Union Bank, our investment financial investment policy, financial advisors to discuss the investment policies, and attended the ad hoc committee meeting, which Nick already detailed for consolidation.
All right. That's it. Thank you very much. Jennifer, the floor is yours.
President Pauly, good morning, members of the board. So I have three items for your consideration this morning for events. We have this, upcoming Friday, July 22nd, the Southern California Water Coalition is having their quarterly luncheon at the Long Beach Yacht Club. Secondly is the Marietta Wildemar State of the City Address. That is scheduled for Wednesday, August 31st, from 5:30 in the evening to 7 o'clock in the evening. And the third event for your consideration is the Western Science Center. The Science Under the Stars is scheduled for Saturday, September 10th, from 5:30 to 9:30. So those flyers are located at the back of your calendar review packet. Now, on page 2 of your calendar review packet is the Board Master Calendar. Please let me know if there's anything out of order or needs to be added to your schedule. At the top of page 3 is going to be the community events and conferences. Upcoming is the July 29th Eastern is hosting here in the boardroom for the, pardon me, for the association, for the Riverside, for the West, I'm sorry, Metropolitan Water District GM, which is Adele Hodge Khalil. He'll be here from noon to 1:30, followed by the BIA Water Conference. That is going to be on August 12th. And then we have the Urban Water Conference annual conference. It's going to be August 24th to the 22nd, located at San Diego Mission Bay. So the remainder of page three is your board meeting and your board committee meetings. They're all on schedule for the next 3 months. And then finalize it out on page four is the interagency meetings that are scheduled for the next 3 months, all on schedule as well. And that concludes my report.
Jennifer, if I could, on the 21st, I'm actually going to be in Denver that day. Could I attend the executive committee and the Western virtually?
Yes.
Okay, good. Any other questions for Jennifer? Very good. Thank you for that. We will any director's comments, future agenda items that anybody would like to see?
Nope.
See none. Mr. Legal Counsel, do we have a need for closed session today?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
Very good. With that, we will adjourn to Wednesday, July 20th at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.